quest for gold. We are now 91 days away from the Winter Olympics in Milan Cortina. I'm Ryan Burrow. The curling U.S. Olympic team trials begin next week in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The trials will determine which men's and women's teams earn the opportunity to compete at the 2026 Olympic Winter Games and the 2026 Paralympic Games. The U.S. mixed doubles curling team of Corey Dropkin and Corey Thies have already qualified for a spot in the Olympics, but the men's and women's teams have not yet qualified a spot. The next Olympic qualification event is in December. We learned this week that the closing ceremony of the Milano Cortina Winter Games will be a tribute to beauty in action, and it will be held at Arena di Verona, a 15,000-seat Roman amphitheater that's actually a World Heritage Site. This will be the first ever Olympic ceremony at a World Heritage Site. A World Heritage Site is a natural or cultural site that demonstrates influence or significance in global context. And it's been inscribed on the World Heritage List by the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organizations World Heritage Committee. What happens with Russia? We know for the fifth consecutive games, the nation is operating with some form of a ban. For Milan Cortina, Russian and Belarusian athletes will not be able to compete under their own flags, but rather as independents due to the war in Ukraine. There are currently three Russian athletes and one Belarusian who have qualified for Italy. International governing sports bodies can make individual decisions as to whether athletes from the two nations can compete in their events. For example, the International Skating Union has approved spots, but the International Biathlon Union has drawn a hard line banning athletes from Russia and Belarus. We know the Russian hockey teams will not compete in the Olympics, but are being allowed in the Paralympics, and that decision came from the International Olympic Committee. Eli Lilly has announced it's once again sponsoring Team USA in the Milan Cortina Games. It's not a surprise that they were featured prevalently during last week's Team USA Media Summit. The drug maker says it's also extending its $5,000 financial gift to any American athlete that medals at the Games. Alpine skier Lindsey Vonn is hoping to do what would have been unthinkable just 6 years ago. She's looking to come out of retirement and qualify for the 2026 Winter Olympics in Milan Cortina. She's looking for her fourth Olympic medal, but first the 41-year-old has to make the team. She sat down to talk about her journey and answer some questions about her health and her future at the Team USA Media Summit.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for being here today. My name is Courtney Harkins. I am the Senior Director of Marketing and Communications at US Ski and Snowboard. The person I'm here with doesn't really need an introduction, but I'm going to give a little one. She is an Olympic champion. She is a three-time Olympic medalist. She's an 82-time World Cup winner, winningest downhiller of all time. Also a New York Times bestselling author, an entrepreneur, founder of the Lindsey Vonn Foundation, dog mom. This is Lindsey Vonn.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Before we get into questions, I'm just going to summarize a little bit about the Alpine qualification period that just started this last weekend with the races in Solden, and that will go through the entire World Cup season until January 18th. Lindsey, you've already achieved everything in Alpine skiing. What ultimately pulled you back to competition and the spark that said, you know, I'm not done yet?
I mean, I think the only reason I'm here is because I had a partial knee replacement last April. I really thought when I retired in 2019, that was it. You know, I had built an amazing life. I was really happy. But then after the replacement, I knew things were really different. My body felt so good. And I just kind of kept pushing myself further and further to see what I was capable of. And skiing and racing seemed like the logical next step. And yeah, when I decided to start racing again, I kind of had Cortina as a possibility. You know, Cortina has always been a place that's been so special to me. You know, my first World Cup podium, I broke the Women's World Cup win record there, some place that I just have a lot of amazing memories. So it wasn't really a leap for me to say I want to come back and compete in these Olympics.
You've been pretty open about the physical and mental toll of the previous seasons. How does this coming season feel different for you?
I think this is different because I have nothing to prove. You know, I closed my career, and I definitely would like to close that chapter in maybe a better way than I did in 2019. But I feel like I'm light, I'm happy, I'm free, I'm doing it because I love it. I'm not doing it to prove anything to anyone. And I also have a lot more perspective now, having been away from the sport for 6 years. you know, I think that just allows me to compete in a different way, to be in the starting gate with a different perspective, and I think that gives me an advantage, actually.
Speaking of advantage, let's talk about the Stiefel Sun Valley Finals that we had at the end of last season. You had an incredible podium, one of the more emotional podiums I've ever witnessed in my years in ski racing. What was it like to finally step back on the podium and kind of prove your comeback successful?
It was really emotional. I mean, like I said, I don't feel like I had anything to prove to myself, but there were a lot of critics last year, and a lot of that came from my peers, from people within the sport, that definitely kind of ate away at, you know, my self-confidence. So when I was able to step back on the podium, I just felt like it was the answer that I was looking for me and for everyone else. And it was, I think, the second most emotional race of my career, only second to my Olympic gold. Just because, I mean, I was 40 years old, you know, everyone told me I couldn't, and I knew what I was capable of doing, and I showed the world that I could.
That's amazing. The depth of the women's team right now is pretty incredible. What does that feel like, especially for you, kind of mentoring the future of women's alpine skiing?
I think it's so fun, you know. When you have a great group of women around you and you all are doing so well, it's such a great energy. I'm also like half, twice as old as everybody. So it's nice to be around this like youthful group of women that's just so strong and so motivated and so energetic. And it gives me a lot of inspiration as well. And like Paula getting on the podium last weekend, you know, she's from Minnesota. We're actually just at our coach's funeral in Minnesota together. He was 99, Eric Seiler, who coached us, and several other Olympians. But you know, it's really nice to be able to be a part of a team like that. You know, I think they had 4 girls in the top 10 last weekend. That's incredible. And, you know, Breezy won the world championships last year, and Lauren Masuga was on the podium as well. Like, it's just a great group of women to be around, and it's really exciting to be a part of.
That's so cool. It's been really fun to watch. Will you talk a little about your goals for this coming season?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably it's not a secret that my goal is the Olympics. You know, I think last year was a great test. You know, I knew I wasn't really necessarily prepared as I should have been for that season. You know, I only had my replacement in April, and it was a very short runway to be able to, you know, try to get up to speed. But I kind of, by going through that, I learned a lot. I got my equipment in the shape that it needs to be in. I physically got in better shape this summer because I actually had time. So this season, I think I'm going to start off in a much better place. I think I'm going to start off in a place where I finished the season last year. You know, I want to be competitive in every race I enter and lead into the Olympics with hopefully good results, good confidence, and a good starting position, because I need to be in a better ranking and a better bib number to be able to compete. You know, I can't be starting like it was at the World Championships, where I was like almost 2 hours later than Breezy. Like, you know, it's a different race at that point. So I need to be in the mix in order to have the results that I'm looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. We can open up to some questions. Do you have any questions for Lindsay? Looks like there's one over here. Oh.
Is the microphone working? Yay. Hi, Lindsay. Peggy Shin with Ski Magazine.
Hey, Peggy.
Thanks for being here. Great to see you back. Going back to Courtney's question on the depth of the women's team, probably deeper than it's ever been when you were competing your whole... What, is it deeper? And can you talk specifically about what you see in Lauren?
I think it's similar to, like, we had a lot of good years where almost every girl on the speed team was on the podium. So it was Stacy Cook, Julia Mancuso, Lauren Ross, Alice McInnes. I think we were all on the podium for several years in a row, Alice and a few others winning World Cups. So I've been a part of many successful teams. And it's always exciting. Every team I've been on brings a different personality, different energy. This one, like I said, for me is a lot younger, a lot more energetic, like doing TikToks all the time. I'm not really young enough to be doing that.
You did a TikTok dance the other day.
I did one. Yes. That was my first and probably only TikTok video, just because it was Law and Order. And Mariska did it, so because of that, it was fine.
That makes sense.
It was approved. But, you know, I think girls like Lauren, or women like Lauren, have so much potential and so much talent and work ethic. And, you know, I see it every day when we're training together and how much she's improving race by race. And it's really exciting to see that development, you know, and be a part of that and hopefully mentor these young women in a way that allows them to be successful and to learn from, hopefully, my mistakes. You know, downhill skiing has a lot to do with accumulated knowledge. And I've obviously accumulated a lot of knowledge because I've raced for a very long time. So if I can pass on that knowledge to these young women, I think that's a privilege and an honor and something that I think is really important as the eldest member of the team and a team leader in a sense.
Makes sense.
Pat 40 from Sports Illustrated. Lindsay, over to your right.
Over here.
I'm sorry, left.
Oh, other left.
My right, your left. My bad. I'm just wondering what it was like watching your sport from the outside when you were out of it, things you learned or maybe appreciated when you weren't in it.
Yeah, I think it was hard at first to watch ski racing after I retired, especially watching the Beijing Olympics. It was a course that all my friends texted me and they said, you know, you would have crushed that course. So it was, you know, a little bit hard because when I retired, you know, I was very proud of what I accomplished, but I mentally could have gone much longer. I just physically couldn't continue. So that part of it, I think watching the sport from the outside looking in was a little bit challenging, but it was also fun because, you know, I saw the new generation coming in, you know, these new girls that I'm now racing with, these young women coming up through the ranks and building their confidence and building their results. And now to be a part of that team is really special. And it also gives me a much different perspective. You know, I don't know that there's very many skiers, if ever, that have been away for as many years and then come back, and you just definitely have a much different perspective. You know, I'm at peace with where I am in my life. I don't need to be ski racing, but I definitely love to ski race, and I have nothing to prove, so I don't feel like I have a lot of pressure, even though my dad says it's the most pressure I've ever had in my whole life, so, so he really is really trying to downplay it for me, clearly.
Okay, sure. Hi, Lindsay. You are an incredible role model for young female athletes. This is Juliet. She's 8 years old.
Hi, Juliet. I love your sweatshirt.
Thank you.
Very cool.
She also admires what you started with the Lindsay Vonn Foundation to build confidence and courage in girls. Even though you said that there's not a lot of pressure on you, one of the things we talked about on the drive here is, do you still get nervous before you race? And what kinds of things do you say to yourself?
That's a good question.
To build that confidence. Thank you.
Does she play sports? Julia, do you play sports? What sport?
I play soccer.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I skate.
Oh, okay. I love it. Well, you know, I definitely always get nervous. There's never a race where I don't get nervous. And I think if I were to ever lose that, that would probably mean I shouldn't be doing it anymore. I think nerves are good. I think it's more adrenaline and excitement, and of course you have to control that. You know, I'm the harshest critic of anyone. You know, no matter what expectation the world has on me, I definitely have higher expectations, and I have to keep that in check. And I've tried over the years to develop a really good system of being able to, you know, control my emotions and bring myself to a place where I can perform at any moment, no matter what the conditions, no matter how many delays in the course or changing weather conditions or whatever it is, that I'm always ready no matter what. But that takes trial and error. You know, I didn't have a sports psychologist. I just did it myself. I do a lot of self-talk in the starting gate. And what I used to do when I was a little bit older than you, I had little tape on my skis. And I would say things like, stay forward or hands up. So then I would look down at my skis and I would just think about that one thing and I wouldn't think about anything else, and it helped me stay focused. So little tricks like that always helped me when I was growing up, and that allowed me to be able to be in this position where I can control everything, or try to anyways.
Hey, Lindsay, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Kevin Baxter from the LA Times. You talked about your goal is to make the Olympic team, but this is the longest you've been away from skiing since you probably started. What does success look like for you? Is it if you don't make the Olympic team, but you do really well and have fun? Is that success? And if that is, are you worried about maybe tarnishing your legacy a little bit? People might remember the Lindsay at the end and not the Lindsay at the beginning.
I don't think anyone remembers Michael Jordan's comeback. I don't think that tarnished his legacy at all. Even though he still played very well, he just didn't win a championship. No, I've already succeeded. I've already won. I was on the podium. I have the record for the oldest medalist in World Cup by 7 years. I feel like this journey has been incredible. I've gotten so much support from so many people, so many young girls and women. I think I'm proving to the world that, you know, a woman at 41 can do anything they set their mind to. I'm not looking to just participate in the Olympics. Yes, I have to qualify just like everybody else. There's not a world in which I would be happy with not qualifying for the Olympics. But I don't think that's in the cards. I'm looking to what I can do in the Olympics. That's my goal. I'm looking forward, and I know what I'm capable of. So I have my own expectations. I'm sure the world has their own as well. But I don't think yours will be higher than mine.
Hi, Lindsay. Bailey from the Female Quotient.
Ooh, I love you guys.
Oh, thanks. When critics said that you were maybe too old or should stay retired, what advice or internal voice kept you moving forward to help you make this comeback?
You know, I've, in the course of my career, a lot of people have said things like that to me for many different reasons. And I've always believed in myself. That's always been my guiding force, is what I know I'm capable of. So even though, you know, what people said about me in this comeback hurt, it didn't stop me from believing in my ability. I knew that I could compete. I knew the way I felt on my skis, and I never stopped believing in that. And I know it sounds corny, and it sounds like that's what one should say, but that's what I truly believe. I believe that I'm meant to be in this position. I believe that my hard work will pay off, and I believe that Cortina is a perfect way to end my career. So sometimes in life, you know, there's a little bit of fate, and I do think that's in play at this point in time.
Lindsay, hi. My name is Daniela Guzman. I'm with KPRC in Houston. I'm back here, way in the back.
Can't see.
Gotcha.
Yes.
First, two things. First thing, I want to invite you to come out to the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, because I hear that into your cowgirl era.
Yeah.
I saw that in an interview, so
I love
come
it.
Learn how to rodeo in Houston. We'll teach you.
I would love that. Thank you so much. I'll get your number after.
All right. My question to you is, Milan Cortina is a really special place for you. You've said that it's like your second home, and I think they have a pizza named after you. Can you tell us a little bit more about why it's so special for you to ski there on that mountain?
I think every athlete kind of has their mountain where they feel most at home. For me, it's always been Cortina and Lake Louise. Those are my two favorite spots. I have a good connection with the mountain. I know what it needs. I know what it takes to win there. It's really where I figured out how to truly race World Cup downhill. And I love the town. I love the atmosphere. Everyone there has always welcomed me and treated me like a local. I think of all the European countries, I might have the most Italian followers, which is actually saying something because Austria is obsessed with ski racing. So the Italians have just always been so great to me. And, you know, my good friend Sofia Goggia is also Italian, so that doesn't hurt. But, yeah, I've always felt really at home, and it's such a beautiful place. It's hard not to stand on the top of that mountain and not really realize why you love the sport. So I'm excited to go back there and see the sunrise, the top of the Tofana Chutes one more time.
Nancy Armour, USA Today Sports. Hey, Lindsay, a couple of logistical questions. What is your schedule going to be, or how many disciplines are you going to race this year? And you had talked at the World Cup Finals about how excited you were to be skiing on U.S. snow again, and you'll get one more chance to do that. How much does that mean to you, the race at Copper?
Oh, I unfortunately...
Or you're not going to do
it? No, it's okay. Giant slalom.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's no, which I'm really disappointed with, there's no more speed races in the United States, so Sun Valley will have been my last race in the United States, which is a great way to end. But, you know, I find it always disappointing that I never really got many chances to race downhill in the United States. I probably maybe got like 3 chances in my whole career, which was sad. But, yeah, this year I will only be doing downhill and Super G. And then I plan to do the team combined. Obviously, you know, that's dependent on results, but that is my intent. And so first race will be December in St. Moritz. And I will be training in Copper all of November.
Hi, Steve Buckley from The Athletic. I'm straight downtown here. During this session this morning, you have been asked a few questions about your age, but even when you haven't been asked that, you've segued to that. So I guess my question is, do you in some measure feel you've weaponized that to use that as a, it's probably too cliche to say a motivating factor, but that's a big deal to you. And also a more technical question, at the very beginning you mentioned working out this summer to get in shape. So I'm wondering if the regimen is a departure from the norm, that it's age-specific and so forth.
Yeah, I think I bring up age because women don't normally compete at my age, and I think that needs to change. I think the perception of women competing older should change. You know, Tom Brady's done it, Lewis Hamilton, LeBron James, you know, all of those athletes were competing in their 40s. It's just not a common thing to see women. You know, Dara Torres did it, a few people did it, but it's not common. And I think I say it because not only am I 41, but I'm also 41 with a partial knee replacement. I think sometimes, maybe it's not forgotten, but I don't know if everyone realizes how hard it is to do something that no one's ever done before, or just, I guess, have the context. Like, I think context is important in what I'm doing. And again, I hope I change the viewpoint of having women compete at an older age. That's what I want. Like, I want it to be normal for women to compete longer and to feel like they can. And my training regimen is different because I think we have more knowledge. The way we train now is so much different than when I started my career, from the training but also diet and recovery and, you know, how we approach all of those things. I feel like I can recover faster because of those things. I'm training a lot smarter. I used to, I think, overtrain when I was younger. I would do 3 sessions a day, which now looking back seems completely insane and unnecessary. I think the way I've trained is not age specific. It's just smart training for any athlete. And because of my knee replacement, I literally can do anything I want to do. I'm not restricted, which in the last, I guess, maybe since I blew out my knee the first time in 2013, I haven't been able to train with no restrictions. So I think I'm in potentially the best shape of my life, which is saying something at my age.
We probably have time for 1 or 2 more questions.
Hi, Lindsay, Erica, Ayala with Black Rosie Media.
Hi.
I wanted to build off of your last response and specifically ask about mobility and what you've learned about mobility training. I would imagine that it relates to recovery and even diet as you were just talking, but what have you learned? How have you maybe even expanded what you've done as far as your mobility routine? Thank you.
I'm really not flexible. I never have been. I don't think I ever will be. You know, I've definitely tried to be more mobile, and I think what I've learned in the last few years is more about symmetry and how my body is aligned in the sense that it's mobile as the other side. So each side is more symmetrical, equally not flexible. and you know, I think with my knee, the way it's been the last few years, I had so many issues with mobility as far as my leg wouldn't extend, and then my left hip would go out and my ribs would pop out and my neck would hurt. It was kind of all this chain reaction. So I've had to realign myself completely and try to get rid of all my compensations so that I'm more, like I said, symmetrical in the way I move, in the way I, you know, I train, and also just the general mobility. So, yeah. Thank you.
Probably one more question.
Is it working? Nick Wolliver, Olympic Rings and Other Things. I was rereading your book recently, and in your early days, you had specific written goals that you and your family or you and your father put together. In what month or time frame did you wake up and really start to nail down these goals for coming back and for Milan Cortina specifically? When you came back, did you say Milan right out of the gate, or did that emerge later on in the process?
You know, I think the whole time that I was contemplating this comeback, Cortina was always there. And for a long time, I didn't want to set that as a goal because I didn't know if I would even be able to compete, let alone qualify or finish the season, finish the first season and get to a second season. You know, I didn't know where I would end up. And once I trained more and I got in better shape and I started skiing fast, then I said to myself that, you know, this is an attainable goal. I can do this. And that's when I announced that I was coming back. I didn't, again, say that my goal was the Olympics because I felt like I needed to compete first and, you know, get back into the swing of things, and people would probably freak out, which they did, and say that I shouldn't be doing that. But my goal has always been Cortina. Again, it's such a special place for me. I don't think I would have tried this comeback if the Olympics weren't in Cortina. You know, if it had been anywhere else, I would probably say it's not worth it. But for me, there's something special about Cortina that always pulls me back, and it's pulled me back one last time.
The USOPC provided that audio feed for us. We thank them for that. Vaughn is in a strong position to make the Olympic team based on her performance in the 2024-2025 World Cup season, including a second-place finish. She's been working to earn points, actually using wildcard entries to qualify for the World Cup. A final confirmation of her Olympic bids expected closer to the Games. And that'll do it for the latest episode of Quest for Gold. I'm Ryan Burr. We'll see you here next week as we move closer and closer to the Olympic Games in Italy.